Sorry, Mr. Project. Interview with Carl Demme.
You got it, okay.
Mr. Carl, you are going here to the
I don't know what you're trying to send me information here about me, but some of it's not quite according to Mr. Hurley.
Okay, good. That's what we want to have.
And also, at the outset, I don't like to see names being used. Now, this is me personally, you know what I mean? I don't like to see names used unless you're going to use a hell of a lot of names. By this, I mean, you go on and on. Now, the names that you use in here, you use several logos, people's name, and just one NASA man's name. But as far as I'm concerned, Dr. Rudolph maybe would be the only man that I would recommend to use in this area. And let the rest of the world, because there's many, many, many more people that were just as much or maybe more so involved than the people who came from DAC. In all due respects, the DAC are taking money from them. Other than the fact that I happen to know all of these people personally, and I know their contribution. And therefore, I would, not that there's anything wrong with the statement, the statement made, and let's use an example. If you haven't already heard, if you know before we leave here, that I'm quite outspoken.
Good.
Kind of set an example, you say, you know, linguistic factors certainly played a single role in the Saturn program. It was at once called Grand Chief's Complex and Delegate. Preston Saturn Logistics Support Manager for DHA viewed the historical development of Saturn logistics to the money for future efforts. And you want to quote what he said, I would say in case of this, like this, I would say that this was a statement made by somebody from DAC, as an example. Not a name. Because you can go in, I can name the names of people, as I say, that contributed much, much more to the logistics and the Saturn program so far as the transportation was concerned, much more than Prince Prince had known this little small thing. And again, I take money like, because you weren't concerned about the Saturn, but the full stage.
See, well, that's why we try to emphasize that these things are working papers. We're just beginning. That's a lot of it's done. And obviously, the whole work on logistics is going to have a lot more added to it. And also, it is, your comment is very correct because the bulk of this particular paper was prepared from Douglas.
Actually,
there were things that were in our papers presented at AIWI meetings and things of this type. All of the other things, now I regret too that there's not a bibliography on there. But again, there's a bibliography attached because it's just presented and run through. And also, that's why we're having a meeting to correct some of this.
Okay, well, I just want to get my order on there. I didn't say my naming people because the first thing you know, this is called a record and a guy that's worked his tail off as an example in this program from the time, say back even before, you might say before the Saturn 1, but I mean the 4 of us was in transport back in the Jupiter days and the 1, Saturn 1, with barge transportation and so on, it came into existence. It doesn't leave a good taste in my mouth, and I'm not talking for the meeting, please believe me, I couldn't.
Okay.
I would appreciate that if you would take me and notice of my web comment on that, because this, I think if you go to Dr. Rudolph and say, since you're talking about logistics, and he says here, not the least of the problems in the Saturn V system, he says it's logistics, and stop there by using names, and that's the time I would use other methods of depicting something, such as the guy smelling the skunk. It's fine, but this seems to have this as one of the incidents and not many names. In fact, I didn't know that myself. If you want me to comment, as I say, I read this thing too hurriedly, actually, to give you unless you want to ask me a question.
I think that would be better at this time. It's just kind of to maybe get your immediate comments, if there's any particular incident you know that sparked your recollection there, that would be useful, because there will be more complete comment issues with that kind. settlement will look quite clear, I don't think. We have a broken balance, didn't we? Whether some people are responsible for transportation, some for supply on repair parts, other than for cryogenics.
That's right.
That's
right. Yeah. Well, those were, in fact, the people who were in staff meeting, Mr. Walker, and we were there. But I mean, being one man who was the cryogenics, which is broken out in, we actually have broken out in three areas: transportation, cryogenics, and the other one was, I can't think of the name.
Well, supply and
Yeah, even though I had a different name.
Yeah, I can't
think of yes, it was broken down. It has been always, practically always broken down that way, ever since we came into existence in 1963.
Okay, and where did that organization begin? Was that carried over from the Air Force?
Not necessarily. No, not necessarily. It was not. It was set up here by, when we changed from we became the Industrial Operations Division of General Congress, or back then with Bob Young from the Airjet, back in 1963. And that's when this type of organization was set up, was in 1963. And we haven't basically changed since 1963. It's always been transportation, supplies, and cryogenics. Basically, it hasn't changed since that time.
So he carried his experience, whatever brought him from the Airjet.
Well, I wouldn't say this, because not knowing his background, he's only here just a short period of time. And I can only answer, I can only state how the logistics office was set up.
Okay.
I can tell you that. The logistics office was set up by a conversation between Dr. Reese and, I want to say Freitag, up in the headquarters, but it was headquarters personnel saying that you do need a logistics office.
Mm-hmm.
And you will do these things, such as transportation, cryogenics, and supply.
Was this about 63
then? It was 60. The letter was actually in 60. It was actually 63 that the letter was written.
Mm-hmm. Was there some sort of crisis that precipitated this?
No, they just were changing the organization from the old, to industrial.
I don't know, you want to say that.
To industrial operation,
yeah.
And it was a complete, I believe it was called a Seven Systems Office or something like that.
Okay.
For the whole Apollo program.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Longo was here.
Yeah,
the
Seven Systems Office.
Yeah. And so they took those people, plus bringing in other people, and I happened to be one of them. Several other from Mr. Miller's outfit. Mr. Young became deputy to this industrial operations, the other member, Mr. Young, and continued on until he was after the Apollo moonshot, and he went to safety. And then subsequently, unfortunately, one of the best friends I ever had died. And so actually, it was set up by. I like to say, I can only talk for the logistical sentence part because I've seen letters and no letters that set the thing up for logistics. Now, the entire operation, why the changes made, I don't know.
When you had the office organized, did you have a lot of inputs from the Hong team, from my own experience, logistics, from the people in the days?
Not necessarily. No.
What about cryogenics? Did that kind of help come in the room?
No, I don't think so. They had to go like mad to get enough product to satisfy the needs and get time, get trailers and tankers and things of this nature.
Were those tankers and trailers supplied by the NSFC?
Some of them were.
They went to contract?
Some of them were. We have some that still have the government and some of them that were built by air products and so on.
Are you talking about tankers and trailers that were used, not like that, sure you see how you transfer all these cryogenics. Tankers and trailers that were used, say, on the area here, or what I'm trying to get at is this. Why would you get, for example, large amounts of cryogenics from other plants in Louisiana to KSC with that project?
No, not. It was part of the office over here. Part of it, I'm going to say my office, I'm thinking basically the transportation area. What you need to do, if I may suggest, is talk to Mr. Walker as well, insofar as the other portions of this is concerned. The cogenics and cadavers at that time, until this recently, I had nothing but transportation.
Okay, let's get into transportation. Any outstanding difficulties or successes you had, or things that stick out in the program that you remember?
Well, certainly, many of them, and one of them that we're quite proud of, and I say it to all of you, that we haven't damaged, my friend, that first piece of equipment getting transportation.
Perfect record.
This week, this is inclusive of about better than 2 million miles in, by airplane, and around 1 million miles by water, transporting carbon on the Mississippi, and all the way from the West Coast around to Kennedy. We're very proud of that record, and I take no credit for it. I give the credit to the people that have worked with me, and the dedication and the number of hours that they put in, and just being there and seeing when the job is done and done right.
Mm-hmm. Well, what does it take to do the job right? How do you come from such a fantastic record?
Well, it's a matter of just being on the spot and just making sure that my motto again and again and again and again is we prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And this is like sort of like time bound cargo, maybe that, on an ocean voyage as an example. Tied on a bucket of paint because hell, it looks like it's going to be a good smooth crossing from a weather bureau standpoint. We're going to have 5 beautiful days, and it's going to be the smoothest tabletop. You get out there to the point of no return, and you're in 10 feet of water. So we always rush down to take care of anything that we think would come up. Leave nothing to luck, so to speak. I don't like to use the word luck. We call it success.
Was there any form of transportation that was more difficult than other, or maybe it's difficult to compare them, but would it got the operations that require more preparation beforehand, for example, in the barging?
No, I have to say it would be the other way around. Even though they had a procedure for handling and loading every one of the stages. However, in the airplane, you go from point A to point B, and if you get into a guy sees a little ice or something like this, one of the prerequisites was get your wheels on the ground, or go around it, or we just don't fly in ice. Now with the barge operation, and I take one away from the air side, in the barge and ship operation, it's a little bit more hazardous because you can't run and get away from something whenever you're at sea, like you can if you're in the air. You're more flexible, I guess you're saying, you're more flexible in the air in your car, you are in the Gulf, as an example, or coming around from the West Coast. We've been caught out within just a couple of hours of being in the, at the New Orleans lightship. Had to stay out there for 24 hours and just stay in tune. Just enough to keep steerage and power on, because you couldn't get in there because of the water being so rough, you couldn't get into it. You just couldn't look for the human. If it was coming from the north, you wanted to go south, as an example, you didn't want to get the tail of your stem to the wave, so to speak. So you just went into the wave or quartered it or something like that. Stayed there. I think one of the things that are missing in this is the uniqueness of these barges that we have. That's just a remote control. On the river system, and then there was a tow that was built, and that's 99.9% of the work on the of transporting the stages from here to New Orleans by the remote control system. And the reason for it, if you look up there, in that picture there, you see that little gizzard shoving the two bars with the stern, that's about Fuquay. Now she's being controlled on the bridge of the barges up in the front. And the reason for it is, and this finally, you can see it there, is that the reason for the remote control is actually, this guy back here, on the bridge, standing bridge, at length.
Yeah.
And you see some ground over them. And this was, this toe was actually being controlled by a by hotel workers.
All on the starboard side.
Yeah. Actually, being controlled, but both of them had the same equipment.
Every one of them had five barges. We have five barges now that are under control.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are. And this barge has been shoving means, this tow has been shoving means of barges since 1961.
That's the Fuquay?
Called Fuquay.
Yeah, Fuquay. Now, is that kind of unique for barge operation?
It's only the one that they're coming.
It's the only one.
Only
one.
Only one. Only one.
At least it's only one.
And this was actually, I had taken credit off for the design of. It was done before, so I got it in 63, and this building's in 1963, and they were using some of these in 61.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually modified. The first dummy run, actually, was the first run was made in MSFC, to MSFC out here in Tennessee, in March of 61,
mm-hmm.
by using a little bit of barge in the middle of the plane.
Yeah,
I mean, that's my engine of it. And they got out here in Tennessee and just had done the wings.
See how she went?
Yeah.
Because you actually control from the back end.
Because this was when you turn the leader to the pilot, you know, the captain of the table.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't done this before. Because
mm-hmm.
even though the stern end was, the around curves, and you had to get used to it. But we didn't know. It's like you have a 500-pound car. And your reference in here, I don't know where your information came from. I don't recall it, and I talked to a man who's been in the maintenance business since 1961. And what you have said about the system is true. But you, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know the part of the towboat.
The bomb diner, yeah.
That would have been, it would have been a build diner. It would have been a commercial one, apparently.
Yeah, I mean,
one for a long time. But I would, again, if I may suggest, I would prefer not to even use it this, but nobody would know it. I didn't even know it.
Well, in a sense, the reason for doing that was just to, if possible, bring a little life to the narrative.
Okay, so
you can do that in a dry narrative.
I would suggest since the Bob Fuquay has done all the work in Mississippi, Tennessee, and Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and 99% of the work for the stages. Now, we're talking about stages. We're talking about stages. In all fairness, instead of using higher bar line as one of the outfits, as far as I'm concerned, it should be nothing but nothing bar line. That would really let you know the people do the work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I wanted to ask you about that. Now, how much of this did NASA own of the barges here?
We owned all the barges.
But,
NASA owned the tow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
We're all in barges. We have four covered barges.
Mm-hmm.
And they are all government owned. We have flatbed barge, we refer to them as flatbed barge, but the hull is the same as the Promise Palladium and the Orion, which is the old YMB-4, and before we had the US YMB barge. But the basic hull is the same, only they're not covered. And the reason for those two barges not being covered, they're called the Little Lake and the Pearl River, the reason why they're not covered is because we use them to take the stages from New Orleans up to Mississippi Test, and they had to be loaded. The stands were loaded from the barge, and a covered barge had to be a crane down and picking up sediment down to get moving the water, so that's why they're open. Then we had two referred to as BG barges, flat deck barges. They used to, and here again is where one would put an elevated tow or something like that, and maybe the buyer did shove some of them. The Y-Wing for the 1C, for the first 1Cs used to be up here,
mm-hmm.
above up here, for the Y-Wing.
Mm-hmm.
But the bulk of, when we talk of stages, the covered barges in the Fuquay handle most of them.
How do you spell member?
I'm sure it's ECH.
Yeah, I think it's actually one of them associated for Alan.
Okay, that's something I can make a note of.
Yeah, if you would, your facts are absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah, but you're talking about going through the rocks and so on.
With the exception of some knowledge in here. You got some knowledge to accept.
Okay, there's lots of things too, like the thing with the promise and compromise. And you know, the barge story isn't told me. This is a good one.
It really isn't, because you haven't mentioned the revolution of the remote control system, and you haven't covered the barges being covered and why they were covered.
Why were they covered?
Why? Because of poor protection. And this way we didn't have to, the sun being down, it's hard enough to keep them in proper environmental condition to start with. They were covered for environmental reasons, really.
Logistics prior to Saturn, you know? Or again, is this a new thing that's on Saturn?
No, okay, but they were used as one in the next time in June,
I think. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was probably used as one.
Well, sure. Actually, the Redstone, the planned use of whatever we got rid of, the transport base in 24, but actually, the thought was given to transporting them by barges.
Did you get Navy personnel to do the barging work, or did you get the people to come out?
For the barge crew, for hound lines and the engine room, for both the tow and the barges, was by contract with NEPA. Has been since the 1990s. They were very shotgun, or mercenary, or whatever you want to call them. That's why we used the government personnel, and civil service personnel, to ride shotgun at the beginning, and then the contractor became responsible. The contractor, if it was Boeing, as an example, or if it was Chrysler, they had people aboard monitoring the instrumentation.
Mm-hmm.
And we always have a man, at least one man, we try to have at least one man aboard every trip. One man with a civil service man.
Mm-hmm.
Even after the learning curve, or after the contractor got used to the equipment.
I had a question about the Guppy. Jack Connelly apparently was the man who pushed a good line.
He did.
Did you approach him? Did he approach you?
No, I didn't approach him. I didn't approach the people here in 1940, again, before I got into the business for the little guppy, the Brady guppy. And the first load was hauled just before I came to England in September of 1963, and we came in this job in October of 1963.
Jeremy Connelly?
Well, I've had more arguments with him than Shakespeare.
What did I get that?
Well, this had a design. I got a new one here with the second airplane.
Mm-hmm.
We saw me for another airplane, and he took the bull by the horns. And in 1964, the day before Christmas, he got the first piece of metal with Van Nuys for the big airplane, for the Super Guppy. And I saw the need for it, and convinced many other people around there that we needed it. An airplane to transport the S-4B.
This is for the S-4B?
Basically for the S-4B, but I try to keep it out of the category of saying it's an S-4B airplane, because the cargo that we hauled in it was more far and above what just the S-4B would haul. We hauled all the limbs, we hauled the command and service module, the IUs,
since 1963, that's every month of cargo, except the last 2 months, I don't remember, but this is the cargo, the total amount of cargo that we've hauled in the airplane, and it's over and above the S-4B, on the S-4, we hauled different regions, all different regions we hauled that total a year or so before they got out of the business, and they started trucking.
All kinds of cargo.
Let me get that clear.
was not necessarily just for the S4B, although it was, but you needed another big airplane.
We needed an airplane with all of them, if nothing else, the winds, I mean, we're going to S4B, I mean, you're
pretty good.
Okay, good. And, we couldn't haul the command and sales module, and we, all of them, these are in the same airplane, with the little airplane, we had to split the loads in, so we hauled the whole damn thing. Because of the weight factor, not necessarily the size of the weight. See what else, the IU can't go on the, this little airplane, it has to go on the big airplane. It's more than 20 feet long.
Well, the first one, why did you like the idea of using the Super Guppy? To meet schedules, it was a problem getting the Saturn 1 from Louisiana to the Cape, but with the S4, getting it to California,
the Cape,
and then
the S4, but now the Super Guppy could haul the S4.
Yeah.
But it was only 120 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But it couldn't haul the S4B because it was 23 feet in diameter, so you had to have one. It was playing with the fact that there was a need for one of them outside the airplane since that time in 1963, and we had some busies. In fact, he wasn't doing that. It's a long story about Conway. I talked to his wife. I was out in Santa Barbara. That's where he is now. I just got back last week on Friday. I talked to his wife. He's now in Los Angeles. I didn't stay around that. But the last time I was out there, I talked to him. I've been talking to him at least once a month. Let's see what he's doing, but unfortunately, no, he didn't make a mint in this airplane business. He made about $1 million. And, unfortunately, IRS got after him. And he's doing his present business out there, and it's called Conway Aircraft. Big sign on the doors, closed, locked up, and the IRS sign on the bottom.
Well, they took one Guppy, though.
Yes, but it's under Unexcel bought out the Royal Space Line, its own subsidiary,
mm-hmm.
in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
That's when Jack made his money.
So not a big part of
it. Well, he went in and he got stock for his efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you showed me correctly, I think it was 67. 66. Either 66 or 67. He had a union problem with his pilots. And he and his office personnel was flying the airplane with cargo going to Lama. And when Excel came to an agreement with the pilots, which didn't suit Jack at all, so Jack said, give him the goddamn money. And that's how he got out of the Aerospace Lines company. He was president, and the guy that rode the right-hand seat whenever the airplane first flew, P.G. Smith, rode the right-hand seat for the first flight of that airplane fell in a desk with the left-hand seat on that big airplane.
Mm-hmm.
I'm analyzing on the last day of August, 1965. 6 months it took me to build and fly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've given me about half an hour, that's all I've scheduled. Before I get out, I wonder if I could ask you about your hurricane map on the wall here. What about Camille? What effect did Camille have on things?
We have the barges, the two barges. We didn't know where the storm was actually going to go for sure. We have two of the barges now, but
at Michigan, and immediately, we only have a, day's warning before maybe this thing started again, and got so big. So we got a crew down from Mecklen with a fuel bay and shoved the two barges, the Orion and the Palena, in the lockup at Mississippi Test. We just barely got the last barge in the Orion, if I recall, the last one went in. Whenever Camille hit, we had a hard time getting in. We put it in the lock and let the water down. They laid them in line with fishing boats and anything else that we could get in down there. But you wanted the Fish and Wildlife Commission. So, the reason why I applied to that is plain and simple is we don't go out on that kind of stuff when they were known. And I applied all of those just to give them indication and to look back on to see what happened in the last couple of years. I need to talk to you more about this thing, I agree with her definitely.
Statements in our no-nos.
Well, no, we go through that thing. All through the South Bay to go by, well, one would be the airplane. And after it was built, it was led up to Mojave, California, and it went flying from Van Nuys up there, which was just 100 miles or so. And it only had just a few hours on it, and Dr. Von Braun flew the thing. Now, this could be, you may not want to print this, because he wasn't supposed to be flying, but he would fly it somewhere.